Welcome back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Hollow Cult. So you know what that means. You've chosen us to help get you through your work week. Get it started off right, the way it's supposed to. With some weirdness. Some good old weirdness. This week we're bouncing back into the 40 and 50. Connecticut this week. So get excited. If you're new here, welcome. Welcome. If you don't want to listen to me and Kyle do some house cleaning for the first 6 minutes, you can just kind of fast forward. But if you aren't new here and you like to listen to us talk, welcome back. It's good to have you, weirdo. That being said, we're going to get through the business. So check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. You'll find us there. Come be part of the community. Join the cult. It's cool. It's good. It's a fun thing to do. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share with us for a future episode of our Thursday, sometimes Thursday, listener experience show, Kyle's got some info that you're going to want.
I do. It's pretty easy. It's always in the show notes. On top of that, it's hollowskypodcast@gmail.com. Write your story out in as much detail as you can. Shoot it there. We'll get it. Air it. And you're famous. There's nothing more that a person could ask for. Paranormal famous.
It's as easy as that. 1, 2, 3. Experience paranormal. Write it out. Send it to us. Fame and notoriety. Doesn't get any better than that.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't.
If you'd like to help support the show, plenty of ways you can do it. We have a Patreon. So for $7 a month, you can go over there and get all kinds of Patreon exclusive episodes. You get all the regular episodes early and ad free. You get super sick casket breath jams. I know Kyle's been working and producing and composing some cool shit that'll probably go up soon. We also got merch drops and coupons that drop early over there. If you're into merch, go to hollowskypodcast.com. We got a merch tab over there. You can check it out. We got shirts, hats, beanies, stickers. Go get you some stuff. Rep the Hollow Cult. It's a cool thing to do. The best thing you could do is just share the show word of mouth. It's free. Just share the episode on the socials. Tell all your weird friends about us. If you listen to other podcasts, hit them up. Tell them, hey, holler at these guys. See if you guys want to do something together. It's cool. Cool thing.
We are pretty litty.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty cool guys. I don't know if you noticed.
Pretty cool. Oh, they did. They definitely did.
The best thing you could do is what I just told you, but you can also go to wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and review. And if I find it, I'll shout you out. I need to go to Spotify and grab all those because I have not done that, but I need to. But not today. So I apologize. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our friend, Julie3875. Julie says, so good because, and then it cuts off because Apple won't let me read the rest of the title. So we don't know why we're good, but we are good. 5 stars. Love this podcast. You are my Monday evening wind down. Love the night shift on Wednesdays. Also, shout out to your YouTube channel. Two friends talking truth and weird stuff. Hella good all around. Metal sign emoji, metal sign emoji, metal sign emoji, guitar emoji, UFO emoji.
That sums us up pretty. You could have just put emojis in there and that would have summed everything up.
Yeah. I mean, it's our personality in modern day hieroglyphics.
Metal and aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that I love and something that I hate.
Yeah. All wrapped in one nice little package.
It's great. So yeah, thanks Julie for taking the time to leave us this great 5-star rating and review. Wish I could have read the rest of the title, but Apple won't let me do that. So I apologize. Now you get to hang out and check out this word from our friends over at the Sightings Podcast.
What is it about the supernatural that's captivated us for generations? Is it the mysterious allure of the unknown? The heart-pounding thrill of an unexplainable sighting? or the creeping fear that a life-changing encounter could happen to you. Sightings is the new series that puts you at the center of the world's strangest unexplained events. From Roswell to Amityville to Loch Ness and beyond, each episode combines a never-before-heard story of an infamous supernatural encounter with mind-bending investigations that will leave you questioning what's real and what's impossible. Enter the unexplained with Sightings. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, Holocult. We are back and excited to announce our continued partnership with Mood. Mood is an online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends, and they'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. Mood's mantra is that cannabis should be accessible, affordable, convenient, and transparent. But most importantly, they believe in supporting American farmers who make all of this possible. Mood was created in 2002 as an online source for 100% federally legal cannabis grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. Mood has gummies for literally everything: immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, sexual arousal, and each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. That's no pesticides, no BS, and they ship to most U.S. states. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I'd mentioned, Holocult listeners gets 20% off their first order with code HOLO. That's H-O-L-O. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use our promo code HOLO, that's H-O-L-O, at checkout to save 20% on your first order. So here we are, Holocult, back in the 40 and 50 Connecticut version. We're magically whisk away to the land that is Connecticut.
Good old Connecticut.
Yeah, honestly, when I think about like America and states and stuff,
it's not Connecticut.
Yeah. As a guy firmly planted in the Midwest, Connecticut is not one of the first states to jump into my brain. that's no like heat toward anybody from Connecticut. It's just like not a state that I think about a lot.
Well, hopefully it's full of a bunch of weirdos.
There's a lot of lore and stuff. A lot of interesting stuff. It is ironic though that, like, because Connecticut's just like super American. Its nickname is the Constitution State. Its state song is Yankee Doodle. Like, that's pretty American, right?
Good for them.
It's one of the first 13 original colonies. I'm just giving you a little Connecticut tidbits here. It's the third smallest state, like, geographically. It's only 110 miles long and 70 miles wide. That's tiny.
I feel like there, I mean, I know there's people that own more property than that.
That's tiny.
It is tiny.
And it's the fourth.
Well, they have like 30 people that live there?
No, it's the fourth in population density.
How?
The smallest and the most packed.
How?
Because people love being in the Constitution State.
Well, I guess.
It's had some famous people that were born there. Samuel Colt of Colt Revolvers, showman P.T. Barnum of Barnum and Bailey Circus, Charles Goodyear of the Goodyear Tire Fortune.
He's famous.
Yeah. Edwin Land, inventor of the Polaroid camera, and Noah Webster, the dictionary guy. So,
the guy's cool not, state. Yeah, he's not that cool.
No.
He wrote out a bunch of words.
He's a dork.
Kind of.
A nerd, if you will.
Yeah, that's one of the dumbest books out there.
A geek. There's different tiers to this stuff. I feel like a geek is like someone who is into learning things, and a nerd is like someone who's into like weird nerdy things.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good description.
Does that make sense? like a geek memorizes calculus equations, and a nerd will memorize anime dialogue.
That's fair.
Am I off? Am I off here? I don't know what a dork does. I haven't got that far yet. Anyway, it's not what you're here for.
Just working it out.
I'll circle back to that in a follow-up episode. But that's not what we're here for. We're here for the weird stuff. And that's what we're going to dive into. You said that you hoped that there was a bunch of weirdos in Connecticut. We're going to start with the melon heads. Sounds great, doesn't it?
It's an interesting title. Yeah. I will give you that.
So the melon heads.
It sounds like a B horror movie.
It kind of is.
Good.
It's kind of set up. So Connecticut has a lot of weird lore, like as a whole.
And it's kind of weird because it's not a big area. So
no, there's something going on. Something weird. Something terrifying and cannibalistic is lurking around in the backwaters of Connecticut. This is the melon heads, of course. These small humanoids with giant domes, bulging eyes, and long spindly limbs lurk in the woods and reportedly prey on passerbys.
Yeah. Well, a big ass head can get kicked.
Especially if they're short.
The bolt. It'd be a funny ball rolling down the road.
Just there's a tiny body connected to it as it rolls around. The Connecticut melonheads are reported to inhabit the woods of Fairfield County in Connecticut. They are described as having large malformed heads, supposedly due to cranial deformation caused by a long forgotten 19th century medical procedure. One of the origins of the melonheads can be traced back to a mental institution in Fairfield County known as the Fairfield Hills Hospital. According to local legends, the hospital was home to a group of mentally disabled children who were subjected to a craniotomy, a procedure in which a portion of the skull would be surgically removed. The procedure is meant to reduce the size of the head and was thought to be beneficial to patients suffering from mental illness. The children were allegedly just released into the surrounding woods after the institution was closed.
I love the protocol here. It's like, hey, dude, just saying you're definitely not all there. Your head's big. So with that being said, what we're going to do is we're going to move a piece of your head. Okay. And this, my friend, is going to fix all your problems. Yeah. I don't see anything that could go wrong. And then when it does go wrong and the hospital goes ass up, they're like, hey, just saying, we could just release these little shits in the woods. Throwing that out there. We just let them go. They'll figure it out. Now they've created a little cannibal tribe of fatheads.
Just running around.
Eating people.
Just running around, attacking the public.
I don't know. How you don't judo kick them, kind of beyond me.
I had to look up if a craniotomy was an actual thing. Apparently it is. So we're gonna talk about craniotomies versus craniectomies.
Oh yeah, let's figure this out because I want to hear about it.
Okay. Both surgical procedures that involve opening the skull to access the brain. But the key difference lies in whether the bone flap is immediately replaced after the procedure. In a craniotomy, the bone flap is replaced and secured with screws and plates. While in a craniectomy, the bone flap is not immediately replaced. It's just stored later for replacement. Mm. Or replaced with artificial materials.
Yeah, that's how that works. Hey, man, we just put this on ice. We could put it back later.
That's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
And I also feel like it's not typically the best idea to run screws into somebody's skull.
I mean, it is the best idea if you're just going to let them go in the woods afterwards.
That's true. That's true. I forgot to consider that.
I don't
feel like the skull is a very thick substance to be running drywall screws through.
No, I mean, I guess it depends. I don't understand why their bodies are so tiny.
All I do is picture rolling a pumpkin down the road, and it has a stem that does like it just shakes all fucking weird.
Yeah, that's it.
That's what I picture. If you judo kick one, when it just takes off rolling, and its body just kind of stays straight and just hobbles as it goes down the road.
Question. How many melon heads do you think you could fight off before they get the best of you?
At least 15.
15's a good... I equate them to like... So I'm assuming they're probably like, I don't know, like 3 feet tall. Probably no body mass except... For, I mean, you have to be a little bit strong to carry around a 37-pound dome.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, 15's a good number.
I think 15's solid.
It'd be like fighting grays.
Yeah. Essentially.
Only any kind of advancement that the grays have, the melon heads have went backwards.
Mm. But the determining factor that we didn't calculate into this equation is, what are the melon heads' jaw power like?
Mm. Yeah, they
because if they can run up and just clean take a chunk out of you, you might have some problems.
Oh yeah, take your leg off at the shin.
Why? Well, I'm done, not saying man. Eat your whole leg at once.
You're done then.
But even if it like gets onto your calf and just bites a massive chunk out of your calf, like that can debilitate you pretty quick.
Yeah. I lose a finger and I'm going to start thinking weird.
You got to start throwing roundhouses quick.
Especially if you only got one leg.
Yeah. Be efficient with them. Make contact. You know, don't miss, because them little things, if they swarm you and they can take chunks out of you, dude, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's like little fathead zombies.
So with any kind of...
What are those little toys called? You know what I'm talking about? You have some in your room up here. Oh, yeah,
Funkos.
That's it. Yeah, they're like little Funkos.
Yeah. So with any kind of like geographical lore, there is a lot of starting points to how the melon heads came about. One of them being this that we just talked about, the medical procedures and such. Those kind of spin off into one of two things. The institution was closed or it burned down. So either way, the kids got out into the damn forest. Other claims that they are an incestuous backwood tribe of rednecks, and these are their offspring running around.
That's a little discriminatory towards some rednecks there.
I just do the research. I don't write the words, right? Some claim them to be the long lineage of a colonial family that was banished into the woods because of witchcraft. I think I talk about it a little bit.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That seems like a little bit more of a, I mean, it's kind of crazy, but it's a little more of a logical explanation versus we cut chunks of their heads out and let them free in the woods.
Threw them out the window and into the woods. Some more variations. According to one variation of the myth, the Fairfield County was once the location of an asylum for the criminally insane that burned down in the fall of 1960, resulting in the death of all the staff and most of the patients, except for 10 to 20 inmates that were unaccounted for, supposedly having survived and escaped to the woods. Legend states that the melon head's appearance as a result of having resorted to cannibalism in order to survive harsh winters in the region, also due to inbreeding, which in turn caused some sort of hydrocephalus, which is like water on the brain, which causes the head to swell. Some retellings of this version substitute the asylum or prison with places of business or campgrounds where the inmates or patients are exchanged with employees, staff, and campgoers. Individual variations will modify what town these individuals originally are from and where they end up. So you have cannibalistic tribe in the woods. Nobody can agree on where they came from.
I mean, that's kind of fitting for that scenario, realistically.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I hate to say it, the inbreeding aspect makes a little bit of sense.
Could be, you know.
Create some anomalies there.
Connecticut hills have eyes.
You know? Yeah, that's what I envisioned. And that's scary as shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's not something that doesn't happen. Like, there's accounts of whole, like, towns living in the mountains and shit that haven't seen other people for years and years and years. So, not that far off.
No, it would be terrifying.
Yeah. According to another variation, which is one I talked about earlier, the Melonheads are descendants of a colonial era family from the Shelton Trumbull, who were banished after accusations of witchcraft were made against them, causing them to retreat to the woods. As with the first version of the legend, this variation attributes to the appearance of the Melonheads due to inbreeding. Melonheads allegedly prey upon humans who wander into their territory. Like the first version, individual retellings will modify what town the family was originally from and where they end up. Sightings of the Melonheads have often been reported in the area ever since, and they are said to be harmless, shy creatures that flee at the sight of humans sometimes. So either they're cannibalistic, attacking everything that moves, or they're scared of you and run away.
They're little bashful things.
Yeah, just poking those giant watermelon-sized heads out.
Yeah. This is my favorite. That's my favorite version, I think. Because they're not cannibals, and it links back to early colonial days. Like, it has a thick lore to it that I enjoy.
Yeah. Kind of getting a little bit more into, like, the commonality of all of the folklore here. One thing that's in common is the inclusion of a secluded, rustic, or single-lane dirt road that runs through their territory. Many towns in Fairfield County and New Haven County have rural and forested sections, and it's not uncommon for these forests to have rural roads running through them. These roads at times are associated with the local variation of the Melonhead legend and are said to be part of Melonhead territory. In a number of towns such as Newtown, New Milford, Shelton, Trumbull, and Monroe, several legends place the Melonheads' territory around a mysterious and mythical street, commonly referred to as Dracula Drive. None of these towns that have Melonhead legends have roads with the actual name Dracula Drive. But depending on what version of the legend is told, one of several existing streets are mistakenly referred to or coincidentally coincide with the Dracula Drive mentioned in the Melonhead stories. For instance, some legends place the Melonheads' territory in and around Sawmill City Road in Shelton, and that is mistaken for Dracula Drive. Some other roads commonly mistaken for Dracula Drive include Edmonds Road in Oxford, Velvet Street in Trumbull and Monroe, Zion Hill Road in Milford, the roads around Lake Mohegan in Fairfield, Marginal Road in New Haven, Jeremy Swamp Road in Southbury, and paths and roads in or around Roosevelt Forest in Stratford. So, Hollow Cult, our Connecticut Hollow Cult folk, if you have any information on the Melonheads or these particular roads, if you've been out on these roads and seen some weirdness, we're going to need you to circle back here and let us know.
I want to go out to Connecticut and randomly stumble at across somebody in a diner or a gas station and be like, "Hey boys, spill watch out for them. Watch out for them Melonheads. They're out here."
Yeah. There was, of course, I started looking for like actual Melonhead sightings, and it takes you directly to Reddit. And one person was on there, was like, "I made it to the Melonhead compound and they all ran me off." And I'm like, okay, sick. All right. From the Melonheads, we go to another place in Connecticut, Hanging Hills, which probably isn't that far because Connecticut isn't that big. So we've got the Black Dog of Hanging Hills. I'm going to start out with a quote. "If you meet the Black Dog once, it shall be for joy. If you meet the Black Dog twice, it shall be for sorrow. And the third for death." So just north of downtown Meridian in southern Connecticut are the Hanging Hills, which run through Hubbard Park, an 1,800-acre mountainous area on the National Register of Historic Places. Covered in a forest, broken by different cliffs and rocky outcroppings, this is the land of the Black Dog. The first reported sighting, of the Black Dog by someone other than the locals was in the late 1890s, when a New York geologist, W.H.C. Pynchon, visited the Hanging Hills and discovered a medium-sized Black Dog that began to follow him. The dog remained with Pynchon the entire day, neither barking or whining or doing anything like annoying. So he was kind of glad to have the company. But when the scientist started to leave, the dog, who he was happy to have along, vanished into thin air right before his eyes. He wrote about his encounter in the April to June 1898 Connecticut Quarterly, On a second trip around 3 years later, Pynchon saw the dog again. A companion he was with, however, having been to the area before, was seeing his dog for the third time. Legend has it that the third time seeing the black dog means a death knell. Pynchon's companion would later lose his footing and fall to his death from a cliff on the same day. This particular black dog is similar to black spectral hounds in traditions across Europe, most specifically the British Isles. Demonic dogs like the Black Shuck or the Barghest also are said to foretell death. At least six deaths have been attributed to this mysterious hound. Many people in the area believe it's best to just avoid the creature at all costs. I tried to look up and find what the other five deaths were, but I couldn't really find anything of any correlation. But it is interesting that, like, we did an episode on the Black Shuck and stuff not too long ago, right? It wasn't too long ago.
Yeah.
But it's cool finding an American version of that, like, primarily British folklore here in the United States.
Yeah, and it makes sense, you know, bringing lore and heritage over with people who came here. I mean, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, especially in Connecticut.
One of the founding states, and yada, yada, yada. I just want to know how the fuck you avoid a spectral dog.
Close your eyes the whole time.
Good call.
Because outside of that,
I don't understand, like, what you do, just pretend it's not there?
Or maybe just avoid the area. Like avoid Hanging sense. Hills as a whole. It's huge though. 1,800 acres is a pretty good swath of land, especially in a state that's only like 3 foot by 4.
Yeah.
From the black dog, we go to another legend of weird people in Connecticut.
Weirdos.
To the faceless people of Monroe.
Oh, fuck.
You go from melonheads to faceless people.
I feel like I'd rather take the melonheads. Yeah. Just off initial title.
Seeing someone without a face is good.
That's going to scare me.
Yeah. It's going to make me double take a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. In the tiny town of Monroe in Fairfield County, Connecticut, there's a desolate old barn in the woods that has been boarded up long ago. There's no paved road leading into the barn. And the dirt road that does exist is covered with gnarled tree trunks and roots. Yet if you were to hike through the woods, you might hear strange voices coming from inside the barn. Sounds like they might belong to otherworldly beings. If you arrive at nightfall, you will see a glimpse of light, my bad, behind a crack between the boards covering the windows. No shadows can be made out, nothing human anyways. What lurks within the solid walls of this two-story barn that lacks a fresh coat of paint? Locals call this the House of the Faceless People. Legend has it that a group of unfortunates live in this old barn with one caretaker who is never seen leaving or entering it. Presumably, the caretaker goes out only at midnight with his charges so that they can get out and get some fresh air. The sunlight is not favorable to these individuals who have no face. They have no eyes, no nose, no ears, just a mouth outlined with pale lips and bony hands grasping around, constantly trying to find their way throughout the world since they don't have eyes.
That sucks.
Reminds me of like the nurses from Silent Hill too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I don't know. This one does feel a little bit lore-y.
Yeah. There's a few of these that it's almost like just people wanting you to stay out of their woods. You're going to encounter the melon heads. You're going to encounter the faceless people. Just stay on the road. Curiosity seekers who are clever enough to locate the old barn are usually chased away by the caretaker that was reported never to enter or leave, but apparently he will chase you away.
Or be seen.
Yes. Yet there have been reports in Monroe of the occasional faceless person who decided to take a stroll through the woods or make their way to the main road when the caretaker is not looking. The unfortunate would unintentionally frighten a citizen on the way to the grocery store or the bank, darting out in front of a car only to have the driver startled, thinking that it possibly was some weird wild animal in the way. The caretaker of the faceless people remains part of the community, most likely to maintain the privacy of himself and his special family. Even the faceless people of this house deserve respect too, accepted by society or not. While many questions remain about these people, especially where they came from and how they came to be faceless, the barn remains impenetrable to all who pass by it, daring to walk up close to the building, if only to be scared away by the caretaker. To date, none of the faceless people have ever been caught on camera, but perhaps that is due to the fact that they are clever enough to move quickly away from the rest of the town of Monroe.
I doubt that. Because, I mean, no offense, doesn't really matter how clever you are. If you're fucking blind, how are you going to see me in a tree with my cell phone out taking pictures?
I don't know.
Riddle me that, Steve. Riddle me that.
I don't have the answers. I don't live in Connecticut.
That's true. So. If you did, you would probably know.
I do like the fact that you're like hiding up in the tree trying to grab snapshots of the faces of people. I get it. There's still another
paparazzi.
There's still other weirdos in Connecticut that we're going to get to. Other weirdo lore. But I'm going to skip it so that we're not doing them back to back.
This one feels a little lorey. Feels like there might not be a whole lot of truth to it.
Evidence, you say? Nah, we don't think of evidence.
Yeah, because the story itself is just entirely too convenient.
If you don't go looking for them, you won't find them, okay?
This bullshit-ass barn out in the woods that needs paint is impenetrable. You can't get in, no matter how hard you try.
Yeah, because you'll get ran off.
And you buy a caretaker that you never see.
Because he don't leave.
And he don't leave, but he runs you off, boy.
Impenetrable.
That's one of them situations where you ask that question to somebody who believes in it, and they go, you know, they're just like, are you fucking stupid?
Yeah, of course they're out there.
They shut it down. They're like, no.
I love it. That's primarily
what type of logical question is that?
I need to, like, you look up accounts of these and it always like goes directly to Reddit, and then you don't know if people are just fucking with you or not. So I guess
go ahead.
I was going to say, I guess it could go with like any sort of encounter, really. Like if you look at the Flatwoods Monster, you look at the Dover Demon or something like that, all you have is, for the most part, is eyewitness accounts of these things. But like with these specific ones in the lore, you don't even really have like specific eyewitness accounts. They're just like warnings, like watch out for the eyeless, the faceless people.
And I'm sure there are legit accounts. I know we've covered stories of faceless people.
Yeah.
Faceless beings.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's a thing. It's just this story in particular has a lot of oddities to it that make me feel like, this might be one of them lore things, like you were saying, stay out of my fucking woods.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. We're gonna go a little cryptid route here next with some Connecticut sea monsters, because apparently Connecticut is on the ocean. Call me a geographical scientist.
Well, you are.
Connecticut sea monsters are mysterious creatures said to inhabit the waters of Long Island Sound off the coast of the state. One particular creature, often referred to as the Connecticut Monster, not just a clever name.
It is pretty clever.
It's described as having a long neck, a wide head, and a long tail. It's said to be dark gray in color and can reach lengths of up to 30 feet. Very snake-like in appearance. Its body was, there was one encounter, it says up to 30 feet, but this guy says, contraire. Body as wide as a horse with a black head as large as a flour barrel and eyes the size of small dinner plates. Sightings of the creature say that it's from 40 to 110 feet long. So maybe there's multiple different creatures here. The first reported sighting of the creature was in 1758 when a British sailor claimed to have seen it swimming in Long Island Sound. Since then, there have been numerous other sightings reported across the state, including in Greenwich, Stamford, and New Haven. One sighting in 1881, recorded in the New York Times, reported that a huge serpent green with black spots, swam by a yacht out for a pleasure cruise and scared the people on the yacht so badly that they went back to shore. In recent years, the Connecticut Monster has become a popular topic of conversation among locals and has even been featured in a number of TV shows and films. Despite its mysterious nature, the creature has become part of the state's folklore, with many claiming to have seen it over the years. The Connecticut Monster is also a popular subject of cryptozoological research. Researchers have studied the creature's reported sightings in order to determine what it could be. Some believe it could be a large eel, while others believe it could be some sort of unknown species of aquatic mammal. So the Connecticut Monster.
It sounds like a play on Loch Ness.
Yeah, it does feel kind of Nessie-ish.
Yeah, and I admire Connecticut. They seem to have a theme of fucked up heads.
They do. It doesn't get
fat heads.
It doesn't get any, like, it continues on later.
Yeah, because, you know, you have the fat heads of the woods, and then you got this thing with a fat head the size of a damn barrel.
You got melon heads, you got barrel heads, you got faceless heads.
Yeah.
A lot of
They got some...
a lot of head in that state.
Yeah. That's some interesting choice.
Yeah.
No, but it's not 30 feet long. That thing's head is 30 feet long. It's got a fat fucking head, big dog.
I love how it goes from, you know, it could have been 30 feet, could have been 110 feet.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell. I didn't have my tape measure on me.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of overlook a lot of aquatic cryptids because we don't really have any here being landlocked.
Yeah, and water sucks.
Yeah, if there's any place that houses giant barrel-headed, horse-headed, 110-foot snakes, it's the damn ocean.
Oh, yeah, and you know the like, I'm going to believe almost any anomalous creature from the ocean.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because the ocean's so big.
Sucks.
It's so unexplored that, you know, you could tell me a 5-mile shark exists, and I go, probably.
Yeah. I'll look at the ocean, but probably ever since I went to Florida, I got in the ocean and I thought, I don't need to do this ever again.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels gross. I feel like it's full of dead stuff and
it is
fish come and people fucking waste, and it's just yucky. I'll go and look at it. I don't need to be in it. I'm a human. If I needed to be in the ocean, I'd have fucking gills.
Yeah. When I look at the ocean, I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah, because it's full of monsters and shit.
Yeah, and it's just like, as you're looking at it, just the vast size of it is overwhelming. Because you're just seeing like a little speck of the ocean. And you're like, there's so much that could fit in that.
And rogue waves.
Well, yeah. Nobody's trying to deal with that shit.
Oh. I'd rather deal with the monsters.
Oh, 100%.
I'm
fighting the faceless all day.
I'll fight the horsehead barrel snake.
Yeah.
I ain't trying to get hit by a rogue wave.
Mm-hmm. I ain't trying to be out in the ocean.
Dude, there's points in the ocean, like Point Nemo, where the closest other humans to you, if you were there by yourself, the closest other humans to you are on the goddamn International Space Station.
That's insane.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
There's no reason. There's no reason for that. You don't need to be out there.
Mm-mm.
Stay on land.
No, that's what I'm saying. The 5-mile shark could easily exist in the damn ocean.
Yeah.
Easily.
I don't want it to.
No.
I don't like regular size sharks.
Yeah. I don't like, yeah. I ain't fucking with a 3-foot shark.
No, like I don't hate them, but we stay on different areas for a reason.
Yeah. That's your spot. This is my spot.
Yeah. They don't want to get punched by me. I don't want to get bit by them. So we respect each other's boundaries.
That's right. Boundaries.
That's what it is.
Every good relationship has boundaries.
And my relationship with sharks is that. They stay in the ocean. I stay on the land.
Yeah.
It's good.
that's a successful relationship. Right?
Yeah.
You know, you respect, like you said, you respect each other's boundaries and live and let live.
Yeah. I've never had a problem with a shark.
Shark's
never had a problem with me.
Yeah.
Just works itself out.
Yeah.
It's easy. It doesn't have to be difficult. It's easy. Just respect boundaries.
Common sense just doesn't, it's just not around much anymore.
It ain't. It ain't. But giant horse-headed 110-foot snakes is not the only thing you got to worry about. Because in 1895, Captain Obadiah Donaldson,
he's definitely credible.
Best name in this entire episode.
100%. Obadiah Donaldson.
Old Obadiah wrote that his entire ship collided with a giant octopus just off the coast of Connecticut. He reported that it was over 60 feet wide with tentacles that stretched over 100 feet. According to the July 17th, 1895 Chicago Tribune, he said that the monster wrapped one of its giant tentacles around the ship and began to drag the bow underwater until, the VIP of sailors, Frank Taylor. And Frank was on the boat.
I thought Obadiah was going to fucking stab it.
Oh, Obadiah's fighting the wheel. He's the captain. He's trying to get away.
Good call.
So this tentacle's wrapped around. I just picture it wrapped around the front of the boat, all the way up the mast. What the fuck
good are you gonna do spinning your little wheel?
This octopus
is dragging you underwater. You ain't got nothing going on for you. Yeah. You ain't even got a motor. You got air.
You got something better, Frank Taylor.
Oh, true.
Frank Taylor, big Frank the Tank,
the original Punisher.
The original Punisher goes into the kitchen and gets a meat cleaver. So we have a calamari tonight, boys. And just starts hacking at the tentacle, hacking it so much. This 60-foot octopus is like, nah, whatever's on this boat, I don't want anymore. Let's go. Just slurks beneath the wave. Slurk is a new word.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it is a verb of how an octopus goes under the water. It slurks. Yeah. So
I mean, welcome. It 100% makes sense to me.
Frank Taylor. What an OG.
He's a hard ass.
Yeah, I would. What would you do in that scenario? I would start fighting the tentacle. I ain't jumping in the water.
Yeah. I just imagine they had like a harpoon stick and they just threw it at it.
Could have.
But in all reality, I feel like that's not a very big giant octopus.
How big? That's pretty big.
He must have had I wouldn't call his vessel a ship. I would call it a boat.
I mean,
I feel like a ship
is subjective, right? It's not the size of the ship, it's the motion of the ocean.
Well, no, not when you have an octopus dragging it underwater. I feel like a 60-foot body
with 100-foot tentacles, that's 160 feet.
Yeah, but what's the weight ratio on that motherfucker?
I don't know.
Big enough to pull a ship down? Like, I think a ship. I think, like, the Black Pearl. Something fucking huge.
Let's Google. We're going to Google here. We're doing the research for you, Holocole. Welcome to the show.
You know, I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like those stats are chump change for the ocean.
Let's look. Okay. The largest octopus by weight is the giant Pacific octopus, having an arm span of 30 feet,
okay.
Weighs 600 pounds.
Yeah, see, that's not even that much.
So it would be maybe?
It's going to take down a John boat, maybe not a John ship.
Maybe they were on a John boat.
That's what I'm saying. They must have had a boat and not a ship. I think it's something with girth.
I wonder if ChatGPT will tell me how much
600 pounds
would
times three. Yeah, you're going to be a little over probably a ton. We'll give it some and say 3 ton. I still don't think that's enough to take a ship down.
I wonder how much each tentacle would weigh.
I don't know.
ChatGPT is on the case, generating. Based on available data, the largest octopus weighed 600 pounds at 30 feet. However, a 60-foot octopus with 100-foot tentacles is far larger than any scientifically documented octopus species. Therefore, calculating its weight requires extrapolation and precise figures to ascertain.
Hey, ChatGPT, just guess.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Guesstimate, bro. That's what you should respond. Guesstimate, bro.
Colossal squid, the largest invertebrate, can weigh over 1,000 pounds and reach lengths of 46 feet. Some accounts mention colossal squids possibly being between 1,300 to 1,500 pounds. They do not give us any estimation. Unfortunately.
Thanks, ChatGPT. You suck.
I just wasted all that energy.
Yeah.
Not getting an answer.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah. I just don't feel like it weighs that much.
It's probably fine.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll still be scared as fuck if I see a squid like that.
If anything from the ocean.
I see a squid as big as me and I'm freaking out.
If anything from the ocean tries to get on my boat uninvited, mermaids, manatees, seagulls, they're getting it. They're getting Frank Taylor treatment.
Sounds like we're going to have to invest in some meat cleavers.
That's a fact. That's a fact. So we're going from the ocean back onto land for Connecticut's very own unofficial Bigfoot, the Winstead Wildman.
Sounds interesting.
The story of a large hairy creature that terrorized, quote unquote, terrorized the locals on two separate occasions, almost 80 years apart. The tale supposedly starts in August of 1895 when the Winstead Herald reported a large man, stark naked, covered with hair all over his body, ran out of clumps of bushes. It was witnessed by town selectman Riley Smith, who was out in the woods with his bulldog, merrily picking berries and minding his own business. When the creature came along, causing Riley to be, quote, badly scared and his dog fairly paralyzed with fear. He described it as a wild, hairy man of the woods, 6 feet in height, and adding that the man's hair was black and hung down long on his shoulders, and then his body was also thickly covered with hair. The man was remarkably agile, and to all appearance very muscular, a brawny man, a man against whom any ordinary man would stand little chance. That's all quote, too, for that matter.
I feel like this is just the town drunk.
And probably the great-great-great uncle of the Melonheads.
Probably. Hiding in the bushes naked? Come on.
Yeah.
Sounds like something a drunk guy would do.
I think Kyle solved it.
Yeah, maybe.
Over the next...
Six foot is not that...
No.
Not that big.
No. Maybe that's why they kind of changed it around. Didn't call it a Bigfoot. They just called it a wild man because it really is the stature of a man.
Yeah. But he said he was like... I feel like he was insinuating that the dude's like swole.
Yeah.
He's like, hey... Ain't no normal man gonna take this motherfucker down. Well, I hate to break it to you, but you use the words in the self quote about being paralyzed in fear with you and your damn bulldog that was picking berries. Of course, you're gonna be scared.
Yeah, the bulldog was paralyzed. He saw that. He saw that dude run out. Just that wasn't the only twig and berries that was out that day.
My fucking blind chihuahua is going to do more than that.
Your chihuahua is an asshole.
He is.
But that wasn't the only sighting. Over the next few weeks, the wild man was reportedly seen by at least two other witnesses whose descriptions matched our friend Riley's. The Winstead Herald speculated that the wild man may have been Arthur Beckwith, an escaped mental patient from nearby Litchfield Sanitarium.
Where the big heads came from?
I don't know.
I guarantee it is.
They have a real issue keeping people in the sanitariums in Connecticut. Yeah. Let's do better.
He might have been ones that they let out in the woods.
Yeah.
And it's part of the course there.
They're like, damn, Harry Arthur, we're just gonna let him go.
Fuck this guy. This guy's too much.
The sightings reportedly soon stopped as suddenly as they had started, with the Winstead Wild Man disappearing back into the woods and long forgotten about. At least for 8 decades. Because...
Oh, and then he came back?
He came back.
Damn, he looked the same?
So he ain't... I don't know. We're getting there.
Okay. It
might not be Arthur. In late July 1972, the Hartford Courant reported that, quote, a strange, man-like creature was observed by two young men on Winchester Road near to Crystal Lake Reservoir. At long distance near a barn, they saw a figure, quote, this time about 8 feet tall, covered with hair. Walked
upright.
That's
a Bigfoot.
Yeah, that's a Bigfoot. And disappeared back into the woods. When it was suggested that they may have only seen a black bear, they replied, it was no bear. 2 years later, in September 1974, the wild man was seen again, this time by two couples who had seen it parked at night by Rug Brook Reservoir. They described to police being terrified, now seeing a 6 foot, 300 pound creature covered in dark colored hair in the moonlight. It had fled the area immediately. Police went back to search, but were unable to find any tracks or evidence. Since then, there have been no other reports or accounts of the Winstead Wild Man.
Well, that is a thick boy. 6 foot, 300 pounds. He's
a whole family of wild men.
He's thick. I do really like the idea that I've said it before. I wish we still lived in a time where you call these things in and the cops took them serious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think that was a way cooler time.
Like the Paranormal Ranger episode. Having people to take your account seriously. I know we were kind of poking fun at the faceless people, but that's because finding actual eyewitness reports of that like was impossible. But you have stuff here, like people legitimately seeing something and being scared and having, you know, officers respond to it. Like, I feel like that's important, you know?
Yeah. And it, like, for me, it just like, it's a definition of a hopeful time. Like, it's a definition of a time where people still took what you said at face value and then believed you. They didn't instantly shut you down and shun you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, especially in these small communities where lore does run thick and I don't know, people just kind of buy into it a little more, I guess. And they treat it with respect, you know, like almost like in a roundabout way, like indigenous people and their lore. And like, there's always a level of respect between you and the unknown that's out there. And I don't know. I just, it's more of like a hopeful, mysterious time.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know. It just hits a little different, I think.
I don't feel like there's a lot of police investigating Bigfoot sightings now.
No.
Which there probably needs to be. Get some evidence on
that. I fucking would. I would love it. First day one of being a little small town cop, but any weird calls I'm taking.
Same.
You motherfuckers get back. I'm going.
You guys go write jaywalking tickets. I'm going and looking for the chupacabra.
Exactly.
I'm going and looking. I'm going to
tase the dog shit out of that thing.
I'm going and looking for the next cryptid on the Connecticut list, the Glastonbury Glowacus.
What the hell is that?
I probably said it wrong. Someone from Connecticut, correct me, please. In 1939, a mysterious creature terrorized Glastonbury and surrounding areas, attacking livestock and pets. It was never caught or properly identified, and consequently, it became Connecticut legend, the Glowacus. Hunters, farmers, and eyewitnesses reported the fierce animal originally as a huge cat, but it remained elusive, and the descriptions became more detailed as more people saw it, which only embellished the creature's fast-growing reputation. It was vigorously described as part cat, part dog, part bear.
It's fucking cat dog.
Various names are also the Granby Panther. And this is not politically correct. I didn't write it. I didn't name it. don't hold me to it, The Engine Devil.
How do you become part cat, dog, bear?
You live in Connecticut. There's a lot of weird things going on in the forest of Connecticut.
Obviously. I'm just curious, like, what parts is the bear? What parts is the dog? Mm-hmm. What parts is the cat?
I don't know which part. Okay, which head would you rather fight? A giant cat head, a giant dog head, or a giant bear head?
They all suck.
Yeah.
I feel like cat is the worst.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get bit by a tiger. I'm not trying to get bit by a bear.
No, so I'd probably go dog by proxy.
I'm not trying to get bit by a wolf.
No, but I feel like I have better odds against a dog.
Yeah. Especially if it was the bulldog from the Wild Men story, you'd probably just lay down.
Yeah. Then again, you'd want dog feet. You wouldn't want bear feet or cat feet.
No.
The only thing that I hope that there's a cat is the tail.
Yeah, cats are fast and sneaky and dicks. Yeah,
they're the worst.
I feel like out of if it has a dog's temperament, you're probably okay.
Yeah.
For the most part. It could get bad. If it had like a cat's face and claws and like
a bear's size.
A bear's size and strength. And then
just a dog tongue.
Gross. Gross. Okay, we're going to get into the description here. Looks variously like a large cat or dog or bear.
Hot dog. Cool.
Glad we solved that. Length 4 feet, height 2 feet to 2 feet, 6 inches, black or tawny in color, long tail, maybe a cat tail. Thinking you're right, Kyle.
Yeah,
sometime
yeah.
Sometime described as bushy.
Fucking ABC.
Behavior. Emits blood-curdling screams.
That's scary.
Unfortunately for you, tracks resemble a puma's, so it definitely has cat claws.
That sucks.
Distribution in north central Connecticut. According to Mysterious Creatures website, after weeks of hearing the animal's cries, finding odd tracks, and only seeing glimpses of it, a full hunting party was organized to track down the Gloacus and solve the mystery. On January 19th, 1939, they set forth into the surrounding countryside, but despite detailed search, nothing was found. Sightings continued for about another month before 2 miles of significant paw prints were found east of Glastonbury. Over the next few months, the Gloacus hunts became something of a local sensation, with groups exploring caves across northwest Connecticut and into the Berkshires. Here are images from one such hunt in April of 1939, which I saved to my information here, and I will share on the Patreon, because if this isn't full-on proof of the paranormal, I don't know what is. It's amazing. This is courtesy of the 1999 issue of the NSS News, a publication for the National Speleology Society. The bottom image is an encounter with a Gloacus. And it's basically in a cave. I'm pretty sure obviously it's staged. I don't know if they try to pass it off as real or not. But it's a man on a rock holding a revolver. And like a foot and a half in front of it is a piece of taxidermy that looked like me and Kyle made it.
Oh, good.
It's the dumbest shit I've ever seen in my life. I wish I could save this and show you.
Is it better than the lizard?
It's on par with the lizard.
All right, good.
I might be able to pull it up and let you see.
Well, then it's real.
Yeah. You know what? It might be.
I just don't understand with the description how the fuck they fit a bear into it.
I don't. In this.
It's only 2 feet tall, but it definitely resembles a bear.
There's no bear about this. There's no bear about this.
Is it more like a cat than anything?
It's like a cat with a rabbit head.
A rabbit head?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to screen share it with you. So people watching this on YouTube is going to get a little treat. It's going to get a little treat. You're going to love it, Kyle. You're going to love it, dude. Oh, man. Hang on one second. I'll get ready.
I can't even really see it.
Oh, I don't know if I can make it any bigger.
Probably can.
Oh, now it changed. Dang it.
Can you command plus it?
I can.
There you go.
Oh,
keep her going. Keep her going.
Why is it going back out?
I don't know. You're hitting.
There it is. Command as big as plus. I can get.
Oh, that's lame. It just looks like a cat to me.
Looks like someone stuffed a cat with a rabbit head.
That's awesome.
See his tail.
Yeah.
That's proof. That's proof positive.
I believe it. And he got it, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
That's how he hunted it. He army crawled in a cave.
I mean, that's. It's,
I mean,
it's
think proof. The lower you are to the ground, the more stealthy you become.
That's true.
And if you army crawl through the cave, then it can't see you or hear you or smell you.
No.
And then you just pull out that 3-foot revolver like from the Joker and you just pow.
Yeah.
And you got it. Got it.
Yeah. So apparently the Glowacus was feeling the heat from all these searching and went into hiding for about a decade and a half. Just said, nah, I'm over it. People are pointing guns at me point blank. Mm. Getting out of here.
Well, it's probably because motherfuckers kept sneaking up on them in the cave.
Yeah. Yep. Army crawling in.
Yeah. I got tired of it.
In the mid-50s, however, it came back, attacking animals and eluding capture and identification. This time, it traveled a bit, with sightings from Glastonbury all the way down to Granby. Soon after that, however, the mighty Glowacus apparently disappeared forever. People have kind of tried to come up with a definitive answer as to what the identity was, but it's all speculation. Maybe it was a rogue puma or other large cat that escaped from a local exotic animal collection. Others suggest that it may have been a fisher, which is the likeliest explanation since physical descriptions and behaviors are very similar to that, right down to the blood-curdling screams. Fishers were pretty rare in the state at the time, so it may have led to some confusion about what people were seeing.
I definitely do think that it's a feline of some kind.
Yeah.
Now, whether it's a fucking ABC or a damn fisher, I don't know. But I do get feline vibe.
Yeah. I got a couple more here. I know we're at an hour, so I'm just gonna wrap it up. There was another weird people one, but it kind of falls in line with the faceless and stuff sort of lore. So I'm gonna go into this stuff instead. These are just little tidbits. Little tiny tidbits here that I got from some of John Keel's books and some of Charles Fort's accounts of Connecticut weirdness. July 31st, 1921, a shower of tiny frogs fell upon Anton Wagner's farm near Sterling, Connecticut.
Nice, nice.
Frog shower. Then a report from the New York Times in 1885 had witnesses see a balloon ascend to the ground in which two, quote, aeronauts emerged from said craft. Upon being seen, the witnesses grabbed, quote, a ripcord and pulled it, essentially causing the balloon to turn inside out and disappear with the entities right before the witnesses' eyes.
That's fucked up.
That's awesome. From the 1880s.
That's creepy.
Which, I mean, you did have your balloon flaps back then. Every UFO is essentially some kind of airship or balloon, but the fact that it landed, things got out, and when they got seen, they're like, swoomph, disappeared.
It's awesome.
The last one, there's not a lot of information on it. It was from John Keel's Mysterious Beings, and I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, it's the vampire mutilators. So this took place in the 70s, right, where animal mutilations were just rife all over the country. But we don't hear a lot about accounts that go beyond like farm animals and livestock. This is what was happening in the northeast of the United States. According to John Keel, paranormal researcher Ivan Sanderson was receiving reports prior to his death in 73 of mysterious vans cruising through the hills of the northeast, New Jersey and Connecticut specifically, where pets, cats and dogs, were going missing in large numbers. One area in Connecticut reported 700, yes, 700 dogs missing in a period of 6 months.
That's definitely weird.
It's crazy. Irate pet owners all over the Northeast were holding meetings and demanding government action. The popular theory was that organized gangs were stealing animals and selling them to laboratories to use as test experiments, which was easily put to rest when the labs that do the testing said, "We don't pay for our animals. We just get them from the pound." Why would we pay gangs? Other theories go to rogue vampire gangs who are killing the animals and draining all of their blood.
I love that it goes from gangs to vampire gangs.
Yeah. Because there was accounts of some of the animals being found drained of blood. 700 dogs in 6 months. In a state that small, 700 dogs going missing in the whole state would be fucking bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, I would be concerned if, like in Jerseyville, 700 dogs went missing in half a year.
Yeah.
I'd be like, what in the fuck is going on?
Especially like people's pets. Because like, yeah, obviously it's not going to be stray dogs unless someone was keeping track of them. But like, I'm assuming like dogs in people's backyards and shit, you know, you put them out, put them out for a little bit and they're just gone. Shit's bonkers. Anyway, Holocult, thanks for hanging out with us. That was some Connecticut weirdness, a little bit of lore, a little bit of cryptid action. There's some other weirdness in Connecticut, some hauntings and stuff that I didn't necessarily touch on. You also have like, man, what was that called? Damn it, I can't remember. The Philadelphia Experiment. That was it. There's like the Philadelphia Experiment triangle where one, like it includes Montauk and all that stuff, but part of the triangle connects to Connecticut and there was some weird stuff going on. Didn't really get into that because trying to find official stuff was hard. Anyway, thanks for hanging out with us. Any Connecticut members of the Holocult that can, I don't know, kind of iterate any of these things? Like it'd be interesting to talk to somebody that was alive in the 70s that maybe remember this going on about the pets going missing and stuff, especially since people were getting at the local government saying, hey, you need to do something about this. To hear from that would be cool. But yeah, thanks for hanging out with us today. Check us out on all our social medias. And until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird, and stay out of the ocean, especially in Connecticut. It's full of giant bullshit.